Paul McCartney and Wings and Jet opening up this edition of Johnny Walker's Sounds of the 70s. A very good afternoon. Thanks to Elaine Page. Well, what's on the show today, folks? Well, we plugged it on Facebook on Friday. And we said we got part two of a progressive rock special. And Ali Leaks put a comment on there saying, progressive rock, I prefer Fraggle Rock myself. Well, nobody seems to like the term progressive rock, so we can go with Fraggle Rock. That'll do us. So, Fraggle Rock supergroup, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. We've got to focus on them this afternoon, and this interview with Greg Lake and Keith Emerson of the band. And our usual selection, with your help, of great 70s music over the next couple of hours. Email to walker@bbc.co.uk, text 88291, or tweet to BBC Radio 2. It's terrible when you mess up the first link, you know, that's just downhill all the way now. March 1977, punk rock in full stride, Fraggle Rock was happening, but still ABBA could top the charts as they did with that song, Knowing Me, Knowing You. Paula Glover, good afternoon from Newport Gwent. I was born in the 70s, love music from all eras. Could you play anything by Squeeze? I saw them on BBC Three on Friday evening, and it was a reminder of just how good they are. I mentioned too, if you could, to Jean and Tony Glover, Mam and Dad, as I know they listen to.
The Indians send signals from the rocks above the pass. The cowboys take position in the bushes and the grass. The score is with the corporal, she is tied against a tree. She doesn't mind the language, it's the beating she don't need. She lets loose all the horses when the corporal is asleep. And he wakes to find the fire's dead and arrows in his axe. And Davy Crockett rides around and says it's cool for cats, it's cool for cats. The Sweeney's doing 90 cause they've got nowhere to go. They get a gang of villains in a shed up at Heathrow. They're counting out the fivers when the handcuffs lock again. In and out of ones for with the numbers on their names. It's funny how the missus always looks a bleeding sane. And meanwhile at the station there's a couple of likely lads who swear like as your father and they're very cool for cats, they're cool for cats. Change the mood a little, I've been posing down the pub. I'm seeing my reflection, I'm looking slightly rough. I fancy this, I fancy that, I wanna be so flash. I give a little muscle and I spend a little cash. But all I get is bitter and a nasty little rash. And by the time I'm sober, I've forgotten what I've had. And everybody tells me that it's cool to be a cat, cool for cats.
And Call for Cats, and we'll have an interview coming up soon with Glenn Tilbrook and Chris Difford, who are Squeeze. Julie White from Bournemouth just text in, oh my God, just booked the Stones VIP package, opening night too. So excited. I bet that cleaned you out your bank account. Got a song from Ike and Tina Turner right after this.
BBC Radio 2 in concert. Bringing you some of the biggest artists live.
This is the night that the Beach Boys came to BBC Radio 2.
In concert for BBC Radio 2, Mr. Noel Gallagher.
On Thursday night, In Concert brings you another exclusive live gig. This week featuring Train. Live from the BBC Radio Theatre in London as they perform some of their latest tracks alongside previous hits. BBC Radio 2 in concert with Train. Thursday night from 8 on BBC Radio 2.
House out, house on highway number 9.
Mike and Tina Turner on Radio 2 and Nutbush Silly Limits. And part one of our special on Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Called a supergroup because Keith Emerson had been with a successful band called The Nice, and Greg Lake had been with King Crimson. And Carl Palmer, the drummer, had played with The Crazy World of Arthur Brown and also Atomic Rooster. So they were called a kind of progressive rock supergroup. And they nearly were actually Help, because the first drummer that they targeted when they were forming a band, Keith and Greg, was Mitch Mitchell, who played with the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And Mitch apparently suggested a jam session with himself, Greg, Keith, and Jimi Hendrix. The session never took place, but there were a lot of rumours in the press of a new supergroup called Help, Hendrix, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But let's go back to the time where Greg Lake met up with Keith Emerson. And they'd shared the bill at the 9th Jazz and Blues Pop Festival in Plumpton in England, and also at the Fairfield Halls in Croydon, England. But it had to be 6,000 miles away in San Francisco for Keith to meet up with Greg.
Yeah, it was pretty instant. We actually met at Bill Graham's Fillmore West in San Francisco. On the bill at the time were the Chambers Brothers, The Nice and King Crimson. That evening after the show, Keith and I met. We were staying at the same hotel, as coincidence would have it. And we met up, as artists do, in the bar for a drink afterwards. And, you know, we started chatting. To cut a long story short, we decided after that to form a band together. Because, of course, Keith was playing music that was European-inspired. And in King Crimson, we were playing music that was essentially European-inspired. And as much as I hate it, the term prog rock, progressive music, that's what it is. It's rock and roll music that, instead of being inspired and taking its roots from blues, soul, gospel, country and western, it takes its influence from European music. And so Keith and I both came from that same background. So really, it really was a marriage made in heaven, in a way.
And then you needed a drummer.
We did, and I got hold of Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix Experience. Jimmy had just broken up the band, and Mitch was free. And so I met with Mitch, and we chatted for a while. And we were supposed to get together with Jimmy for a jam. And there was a thing going for a while. They were calling the band Help, Hendrix, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But we got a call a couple of days later from a man called Robert Stigwood. And he was the manager at the time of the Bee Gees and the Cream. And he said, you know, Greg, I've got this incredible drummer that you should take a look at. He's very young, his name's Carl Palmer, and he's technically brilliant. And so I said, okay, ask him if he'd come and see us. And he came down, and we played together. It was instantly obvious that this was the chemistry. This was the right, this was the band.
It was a huge start for Emerson, Lake and Palmer as a live band with the Isle of Wight Festival, which probably turned out to be much bigger in a way than you thought it was going to be.
Yes. There was no way of envisaging the dimension of it, because nobody had ever seen anything like that.
This is 1970.
It is, yes. It was a mind-numbing sight. I don't suppose you would ever see that many people assembled in one place.
How many was it? 500,000 or something?
The figures vary. It depends on who you listen to, but it was certainly biblical. You know, it was like looking out at this ocean of people, and it was staggering. You realise that you're going to get up there and play, and that such an event could be life determining as an artist, and indeed for ELP it was, and we were lucky that we got up and played. And the audience just loved it. And from one day to the next, we became a middle page in the Melody Maker to the front page of the Sunday Times. It was that dramatic. We were the front page of every newspaper, and for a number of years, we were the darlings of the British press.
Emerson, Lake and Palmer from the album Works Volume 1, Fanfare from the Common Man. And before in conversation with Greg Lake, who played bass, guitar, lead vocals and songwriter with Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And Alan Milne in For Fire and Anger said, don't let any detractors stop your series on prog rock. Genesis was great last week and looking forward to ELP today. I was 15 and at school at the start of the 70s and graduated working, married and with a kid by the end. It's the music of the most significant part of my life.
I feel so bad, I got a worried mind. I'm so lonesome all the time. Since I left my baby behind on Blue Bayou. Saving nickels, saving dimes, working till the sun don't shine, looking forward to happier times on Blue Bayou.
Come what may to Blue Bayou. fishing boats with their sails afloat. If I could only see that familiar sunrise through sleepy eyes, how happy I'd be.
Brilliant singer. Linda Ronstadt, of course, her backing band became the Eagles. That was a huge hit in America. Sold 2 million copies, her version of Roy Orbison's Blue Bayou from the album Simple Dreams. And she got a platinum disc for that one. Hi, JW. Good afternoon, sir, says someone who just signs their text R with a couple of kisses. How about some Led Zepp? For example, Fall in the Rain. It'll help with my marking this afternoon.
I see you tonight. And the warmth of your
That's all the marking done in about 6 minutes. And everyone got an A+. Good news. Led Zeppelin, Fall in the Rain, from the album In Through the Outdoor that came out in 1979. Our first hearing from Keith Emerson of ELP coming up after this for Jeff Clark. This is Colin Blunstone. Colin Blunstone and I Don't Believe in Miracles. Radio 2 on a Sunday afternoon. Johnny Walker, Sounds of the 70s, on the go here with a bit of ELP today. And Val Porch from South Wales said, can't wait for my Conquering Heroes of the 70s ELP. Love them still. And such great happy memories of seeing them a couple of times in the then Capitol Theatre in Cardiff. What shows they put on. And different places of people are listening to our Emerson, Lake and Palmer special. Les and her husband David, actually outside. It's a glorious sunny day in West Wales. They're in the outside hot tub drinking vodka and listening to ELP. Gerard Kennedy said, you become a Sunday tradition at the Kenny household over here in Newfoundland. Normally I listen as I prepare brunch for my wife and son. We're having a great stretch of fine fall weather. And today I have the laptop and speakers set up on the back deck as I rake the leaves and clean up the garden. Great for you to profile Emerson, Lake and Palmer, as they're one of my faves. Well, the flamboyant keyboard player and that great sound of Hammond organ and Moog synthesizer provided by Keith Emerson.
My father played the accordion and then got an upright piano. He kind of taught me to play the piano by ear and I sort of copied him. So he had me taught. But I never went to any music college or anything like that, you know. About the age of 14, I'd had all the lessons that I really wanted to have, and using a combination of playing by ear and being able to read music was pretty helpful, actually.
And at the time, were you listening to jazz or classical or a bit of everything?
Oh, I love jazz. I wasn't so much into the pop-orientated thing, although probably about as far as I got with that was listening to Floyd Kramer on the Rebound and B-Bumble's Stingers playing Nut Rocker, and which I thought was absolutely delightful. You know, I was into Russ Conway and...
Really?
Yeah, I was into Russ Conway. And so was Rick Wakeman, actually.
So then you had success with the band The Nice in the 60s. And then I suppose the seeds of Emerson, Lake and Palmer was when you did a gig with King Crimson.
Yes, that would have been in very early 1970 or very late 69. I was with The Nice and Greg was with King Crimson. And that's where I first met Greg.
So before that first gig... In 1970, Plymouth or Portsmouth Guildhall, I think. There must have been a lot of rehearsal. Where did you rehearse, and how long did you spend rehearsing?
Probably we rehearsed for about... it could have been about 2 months, perhaps. Surprisingly, we got a record deal just under the fact that there was Greg Lake, Carl Palmer and myself in one band, and... somebody applied the name Supergroup, mainly because Crosby, Stills and Nash had already applied that to what they were doing. So,
Is that why you called yourself Emerson, Lake and Palmer? You know, Crosby, Stills and Nash, they thought this is the thing to do?
Well, I thought that, you know, each of us have so much to offer individually, apart from as a band, that I didn't feel a group name was that appropriate. There was, little occasional ribbing from certain members, you know, why is it your name comes first? So, well, it's in alphabetical order, okay?
Just a step, cried the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the plight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance.
We had no other really body else to sort of match up with. It was completely different. That nobody else had a Moog synthesizer. If they did, they didn't tour with it. So the whole sound, the whole live sound, and we were a live band, revolved around that. And yeah, we were writing different music. Although sort of, I think Greg held the whole thing stable by, you know, writing the more romantic ballads, whereas I was really getting into experimentation, but not for experimentation's sake. I agonized over every note that I wrote for pieces like Tarkus and Trilogy. And for me, I could always hear an orchestra playing it at the end of the day.
Well, let's play something from Tarkus.
Okay.
You're really going for it. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and an excerpt from Tarkus. The kind of wild Keith Emerson on stage, how did that all sort of come about? I mean, he used to fling the organ around and it was just crazy stuff.
Well, it definitely wasn't my personality off stage. Just something else took over when I went on stage. I think basically I was pretty shy, you know. When we went on tour, we rarely hung out with each other. We hung out with other individual people, and that was it. I mean, nothing on the lines of Led Zeppelin, which I love dearly, of course, but I think most of their antics were put out of all proportion.
Let's talk a bit about the most successful album for ELP, which is Brain Salad Surgery, and your version of Jerusalem. Was that a group decision? Let's do that. Or was it your idea, or how did that come about?
I'd actually tried to do a version of it with the Nice, and for some reason it didn't really come about. It didn't work. And I mentioned it to Greg, and he said, "No, it's great. You know, I've got William Blake lyrics, and Parry, I think, wrote the music." So I said, "Well, do you fancy giving it a go?" So he said, "Yeah, okay." So I tried to really make it very, very triumphant, as the theme is. I don't really view it as a hymn. For me, it's just a great... It's a great song. It's a great British song. It doesn't defy anybody, you know. I mean, you could sing it in church, you could sing it anywhere you want, really. And it's got that powerful momentum. The same as Elgar. You know, you've only to listen to Elgar and... down there, oh, it's World War II, you know, Spitfires flying over, and Jerusalem. And, of course, you know, I was a pilot by this time, and so I thought, well, yeah, I've got to play Jerusalem, you know. And it took off, but I think there again we were misunderstood. A lot of people thought that we were born-again Christians or something. You know, I think all of us, you know, have a respect to all religions. We were quite proud about it, you know.
Yeah. Keith Emerson of ELP and an excerpt of Jerusalem.
Frankly, the management team have some big questions to answer.
9 months after hearings began, the Leveson inquiry into press scandals has ended.
One of the ancient titles for a bishop is Pontifex, the bridge builder, and that's a big role for the church today.
BBC Radio 2's Faith in the World, exploring the morality of the nation.
We're asking what the great religious traditions have to say about how we behave, and asking people of faith and of no faith how they work out the rules for themselves.
Religion has almost lost its way.
Ethics don't buy you a Ferrari.
BBC Radio 2's Faith in the World, continuing with Diane Louise Jordan's Sunday Half Hour, tonight from 8:30.
And for me, myself, and I.
The house for hours, or rearrange
Wonderful track from a great album, Marianne Faithfull, The Ballad of Lucy Jordan. I'm just sitting there thinking, I bet Rick Wakeman is really grateful that Keith Emerson said, Rick Wakeman, he was into Russ Conway as well. I mean, my mum loved Russ Conway. You want Keith's phone number? Rick, we'll pass it on.
How long has this been going?
voice of Paul Carrack with the band Ace and How Long. More great 70s songs coming up in the next hour, and more too from Emerson, Lake and Palmer. This is BBC Radio 2, online on digital radio and on 88 to 91 FM.
BBC News at 4 o'clock. This is Tom Sanders. Hundreds of people have gathered in Cardiff, close to the spot where a woman was killed in a series of hit and runs. Karina Menzies died and 13 people were hurt when they were struck by a van over a half-hour period on Friday. A 31-year-old man is under arrest on suspicion of murder. Angry mourners at the funeral of an assassinated Lebanese security chief have tried to march on the office of the Prime Minister in Beirut. They broke through a security barrier before clashing with police, who fired tear gas and shot in the air to try to disperse them. Many Lebanese blame Syria for the deadly bombing. Police are still questioning a man and a woman from Prestatyn in North Wales on suspicion of murder. A fire in the flat on the floor above them killed a woman and two children. Her partner and their baby, who were in the flat at the time, are critically ill in hospital. Steve Beach is at the scene.
Forensic examiners have been at the house throughout the course of today, looking into what exactly started this fire. People have been arriving with flowers and big cuddly toys and tributes for those who died in Friday's fire. The family were shaken, very emotional, didn't want to speak to us or be filmed on camera, but they were huddled together on the floor behind me in front of the house for about 50 minutes in just a real state of shock earlier on today.
Police have arrested a man on suspicion of assault 2 days after the Sheffield Wednesday goalkeeper Chris Kirkland was struck by someone who ran onto the pitch at Hillsborough. Wednesday were playing Leeds United. Here's Richard Lister.
The incident happened just after Leeds scored an equaliser in the second half of Friday night's game. Television footage shows a man running onto the pitch, striking the Sheffield Wednesday goalkeeper in the face and pushing him to the ground before running back into the crowd. Gloucestershire police say a 21-year-old man has now been arrested in Cheltenham and is being questioned on suspicion of assault. It was the worst in a series of ugly scenes at the match, which the Football Association is now investigating. After the game, both teams condemned the violence.
An academic who studies surnames believe he can predict someone's status from their name. Greg Clark has tracked the face of people with unusual surnames from the early 19th century to the present. To his surprise, he found that someone with an unusually spelt name, say Smith with a Y, was much more likely to have money and a good education than, say, Smith spelt with an I.
If we just know that you share a surname with someone who was wealthy in 19th century England, that is rare, we can predict that you're 9 times more likely to be at Oxford or Cambridge now as the average person, that you will have a wealth that's double that of the average person on average. Criminals in Britain are more likely to be Smiths than a person in the average population, and Smiths are less likely to appear in high-status positions.
And that's the latest BBC News. 3 minutes past four, our next at five.
Thank you. BBC Radio 2. It's a little pause there. Now, latest travel news. Here's Bobby Pryor.
Johnny, thank you. A58, Greater Manchester, West Horton. Now, there was an accident that closed the A58 Cricketers Way a few hours ago. It is still shut between the Wigan Road and the A6 Manchester Road, and police are there directing traffic. So if you're anywhere near the cricket club, it's going to affect you. Also, there are roadworks on the Bolton Road nearby, so that's not helping. M1, northbound. There's an accident between junctions 18 and 19. Getting reports of one between Rugby and the M6 A14. Now, they're early reports. There's definitely an accident. There's definitely congestion. At least one lane is shut at the moment. I'll hope to have more for you in an hour, and of course you can update us. The A404M, just a reminder that southbound, the link road between the M40 and the M4, once you get south of Marlow, it's closed for resurfacing work between Junction 9B, which is the A4 Bath Road Thicket roundabout, down towards the M4 at Junction 8-9. Now, it won't reopen until 5 o'clock tomorrow morning when the resurfacing work finishes. A12 southbound at Martlesham, and that's partially blocked with an accident at the A1214. It's just on the roundabout. There are queues on the approach. Now, the other side of Ashford at Bethesdon on the A28, we've got it blocked by an accident at Bull Lane. It's blocked completely in both directions. To Dorset in Herne, the A338, which is east of Bournemouth, still partially blocked between the Blackwater Junction and the A31, which is the Ashley Heath interchange, following this earlier accident. To Cornwall, the A389, again, still closed between Little Petherick and Padstow. There was an accident earlier, so they're still trying to clear that up. And the telephone number to update us here at Radio you to is 03 700 100 200 and I'll be back just after five.
Thank you, Bobby. Moody Blues and Questioning open up hour number two of Sounds of the 70s. Good afternoon to Steve, who's trucking into London from Scarborough. Some Bowie, please, and Ziggy if possible.
Played guitar, jamming good with Weird and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. They played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band. Ziggy really sang, screwed up eyes and screwed down hairdo. Like some cat from Japan, he could lick 'em by smiling. He could leave 'em to hang. Became on so loaded, man. Well hung in snow white tan. God-given ass, he took it all too far, but boy, could he play guitar.
To the very end, David Bowie, Ziggy Stardust. Coming up from Greg Lake, the story of how a very simple song he wrote at the age of 12 really helped to open the door to American success for Emerson, Lake and Palmer. The song was Lucky Man.
He had white horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Lace and feathers, they made up his bed. A gold-covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was. He was.
So the first album, the eponymous album, Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and it contained this wonderful ballad that you wrote called Lucky Man, which was Keith okay about that song, or was there some chat about it?
Well, it never really sat comfortably with him. And what happened was we had come to the end of the album, and in those days, of course, it was vinyl, and you had to have a certain amount of tracks per side, and we were one track short, and we had one day left in the studio. So it came to the moment when the engineer said, is there any other tracks to record? And there was blank faces all around the studio, and we were short of a track. So I said, look, I mean, if we've got nothing else, I did write this little kids folk song that if we haven't got anything else, at least it would be a filler. So Keith and Carl said, well, look, play it, let's have a listen to it. So I played Lucky Man to them, and Keith, he frowned, oh dear, and he just couldn't find a way of approaching it. He said, why don't you record it on your own? He said, I'll go down the pub. So the original take was me on acoustic guitar and Carl on drums. And then I put a bass on it. And then I started to overdub, and I put a lead vocal down. I then put some harmony vocals, five-track harmony vocals. I put more guitars on, a lead guitar. Eventually, Keith came back from the pub, and we played it to him. And he was, quite frankly, he was astonished that it had developed into this quite powerful record by then. So he said, well, I should play on it, you know. Bright boy he was, but he did, quick to pick
up. I know some of the royalties on this one.
Yeah, quick to pick up. So I said, okay then. I said, but the thing is, I've already put the guitar solo on. So he said, well, I'll play something at the end, you know, just so it goes out. He said, I'll tell you what, I've just had this instrument delivered called a Moog synthesizer, and it was sitting out in the studio. He said, I've never played it before, but there may be a sound on that we could use. So he said, just run the track. So we played the track for him, and whenever I play rehearsal tracks, I always put it in record, because you never know if someone by accident just catches something great. And this was one of those times. And in fact, what happened is we flipped the track in record and pressed the dim button so we didn't have to hear it. And I'm sitting there talking to Eddie Offord, and the track's going by, and Keith's out there going through all these motions, and it's playing in the background. It's very quiet, you know. And it gets to the end of the track, and we stop the tape. And I said, I looked to Eddie and I said, is that me? Or did that sound good? And Eddie said, I think it did sound good. Let's play it back. And we spun back and we played it. And that is the solo that you now hear on the record.
Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Lucky Man. Greg Lake is here with us at Radio 2. So you mentioned Eddie Offord. He was the tape engineer, the studio engineer.
Yes.
And you were acting as producer. Where did you learn all that studio technique from?
Well, I'd always been interested in recording. And I became involved in the studio with King Crimson. I co-produced In the Court of the Crimson King. And so when it came to record ELP, I was really the only one who had that knowledge. And of course, Eddie Offord had that knowledge too. Eddie and I got on real well together. And it was something I just took naturally to doing. And music at that time, especially ELP music, was built up very much Meccano style. You know, we'd record the first 3 minutes of something. The next day we would record another 2 minutes. Next day we'd go back in and record 8 minutes. And we could literally stop in mid-song. And Eddie used to have this incredible technique of editing with a razor blade. And sometimes the tapes would have sort of steps in them where they weren't, you know, it wasn't just a straight cut. He would, the bass would go on a little longer, and it was a work of art, really.
Was there always a tension, really, between Keith, who's sort of very grandiose and huge, epic pieces, and yourself, who's capable of writing a beautiful, contained ballad?
I think that was the part of the beauty of the LP, was that dynamic shift from being really intense to being really beautiful. I think that was one of the attractions of the band. As with all bands, I think if you... It doesn't matter which band you choose, any one of them, that was really great, that was really meant something, you're going to find inside that band there was a lot of internal conflict. Because the people cared what they did. They did it with a passion. They believed in what they were doing. They fought for what they could envisage. They fought for their vision of what it should be. And I think the same was true of ELP, it's true of Zeppelin. That's true of any of the bands I can think of.
Conversation with Greg Lake and music from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and more coming up.
New to BBC Radio 2.
She was a woman who could bash it out.
She got on with everyone. Full steam ahead. You
dream, but Barbara Windsor profiles her ladies of song, starting with Alma Cogan.
Alma's name has often been taken in vain, but Ian Jewery once said that she was the best popular singer Britain had ever produced. She once told me I reminded her of Charlie Drake, but I've forgiven her for that. She was great.
Barbara Windsor's Ladies of Song, starting with Alma Cogan and including an exclusive play of a previously unheard recording. Wednesday night from 10 on BBC Radio 2.
Every cloud has a silver lining, so hold me close. Hold me close. Hold me close. Don't let me go.
David Essex and Hold Me Close. There's a special coming up soon on Radio 2. I'm in conversation with Art Garfunkel, and we did the interview earlier on this week. He was definitely on form. And as I say, a special coming up before Christmas. And he was talking about how he discovered rock and roll, really, by listening to the radio. Not Alan Freeman, but an American DJ called Alan Freed, coined with the man who invented the term rock and roll. And one of the songs he played was a hit in 1959 for the Flamingos. And Art Garfunkel listened to that and he thought, kind of a good song that. Wonder if I might record my version one day. Well, he did, this week in October 1975, and it went to number one.
My love must be a kind of blind love. Thank you.
Number one this week in 1975, Artgar Funkel, and I Only Have Eyes for You. And that's one of 34 songs on an album called The Singer, where Artgar Funkel's put together a whole load of songs that he's sung as a solo artist and also favorites from Simon and Garfunkel. And that Artgar Funkel special coming up soon on Radio 2. Now, this from Mel, who said, any chance of a bit of Mott the Hoople, in particular Roll Away the Stone? I was 8 when I bought this, and I remember my friends at school thinking I was mad. How little they knew, Mel, about really great music. And this one says, play something loud and rocking for me and my mum. She's driving me back from Sussex to Anglesey after the first round of entrance exams for Christ Hospital School. Good luck to all those who took the exams yesterday, says Vincent Parker. The Hoople and Roll Away the Stone. Thanks for all the ELP texts and emails coming in. That's all the ELP fans. Definitely out the closet this afternoon. And lots of mentions too for Fluff Freeman. Alan Freeman really helped ELP on Saturday afternoons. Saturday Rock Show, welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. He always used it in his show. One of his favorite tracks also is Edgar Winter's Frankenstein. Always a good track to test your new stereo to. Prog rock might have been a product of the 70s, but it's surprising how mainstream some of it sounds now. Practically M.O.R., if you ask me. That's Craig Hambling from Accrington. This from Peter Gunn in Beaconsfield. On 9th of December 1970, I was at the London School of Economics, where there were regular electricity blackouts in the early evening. We walked down to the Lyceum to see a special 1¾-hour performance by Emerson, Lake and Palmer, which was being filmed. They'd arranged for a backup generator in case of a blackout. Was that film ever issued or broadcast? Well, it had a theatrical release in 1973 as a video version of the live album Pictures at an Exhibition, and a DVD version came out in the year 2000. Emmanuel Visco in Vicenza in Italy. Great to hear ALP, the soundtrack of my life. since the 1970s. Graham Knight in Leeds saw them three times in the 70s in Liverpool, again when they got back together in the 1970s. And this one from Victoria in Worcester said, loving the music and focus on ELP brought back memories from the early 70s, listening to them live at Lanchester Polytechnic, as it was then, in Coventry. I seemed to be leaning casually against a black wall, waiting for them to start. When they did, I leapt miles in the air as I discovered I was actually leaning up against a huge bank of speakers. Then I stood in awe as they performed a brilliant set. I was with a young man from Market Drayton in Shropshire, a friend of a friend, blonde and gorgeous and student heaven. That didn't last, but my love of ELP did. Well, some conversation now with Keith Emerson. We somehow got around to talking about money, and I mean, they sold millions of albums and did massive stadium tours of America. He must be quite a wealthy man, Keith Emerson.
All of the money that that I made got invested back into new projects and with orchestras. And, of course, ELP did invest an awful lot of money into orchestral works and even touring with an orchestra. And we almost went bankrupt then. Now, we went through a very bad time and lost a lot of money. I've never overindulged. I don't know about... Carl has obviously done very well with touring with and making albums with Asia and completely changing and making that crossover from progressive to radio-playable material, which is just something which... I tried, but I couldn't do it. Whether Greg still wants to pursue that thing is up to him. I'm definitely pursuing another angle of being a composer, or a decomposing composer, and that doesn't make any money at all, really. So I'm not too worried about it, as long as my music comes out the way that I like it, and that's great with me. But no, I'm not a rich guy by any shape or form.
Let's play something from Brain Splint Surgery, written by Alberto Ginastera. Approached a publisher to see if you could do your version of that, but turned down.
We were in the middle of doing Brain Salad Surgery, and Carl said, "Let's try something." You know when Carl turning to me and saying, "You remember when you did that Bartok piece, Barbarian, on the very first ELP album? Why don't we do something like that again?" I said, "Well, yeah. I mean, I do have this piece, but." He said, "Well, what is it?" I said, "It's Alberto Ginastera's Piano Concerto, the last movement." He said, "Oh, yeah, we got to do it." I think Stuart called up. I think I actually called Boosey and Hawks, and I spoke to somebody there. And I said, "Well, you know, I'm sorry, but Alberto Ginastera does not allow anybody else to play his music or make any sort of adaptations." I said, "Well, do you have Ginastera's number? I know he lives in Geneva." Well, here's his wife Aurora's name. And I spoke to Aurora, and she said, "Oh, yes, I have heard of you. Why don't you and your manager come tomorrow?" Which we did, and we arrived in Geneva, and there was the maestro Ginastera, and he said, "Well, come into my little studio." He had a Revox tape recorder. I had the tape, and he put it on. So he played it all the way through, and he sat there looking, like, really sternly out the window, and then switched the tape off, and there was a moment's silence, and he looked at me, he said, "Diabolique." I thought, oh, well, he definitely doesn't like it. He's called it diabolical, which apparently is a big, it's a big, yes, that's cool, man. So I couldn't believe it. And I said to him, would you mind calling Busey and Hawks up and telling them that you're okay with it? And he said, no problem. So that blew me away.
Keith Emerson mentioned a new project there in the interview. It's called Three Fates, which is kind of a reworking of some of Emerson, Lake and Palmer's music with guitarist Mark Bonilla and also Japanese conductor Terje Mikkelsen, plus the Munich Radio Orchestra. It's released on the 29th of October.
Jazz for me, I guess, is improvisation, conversation, and it's freedom.
Jamie Cullum on BBC Radio 2.
And on my show this week, I'm joined by one of the greatest jazz singers of all time, the incredible Dame Cleo Lane.
Can you picture those lazy mornings?
There are a few singers out there, I think, that have such an incredible range and have so much personality coursing through their music as Dame Cleo Lane. And she's British as well. It's just going to be amazing to meet her and chat to her and play with her as well.
Jamie Cullum with Dame Cleo Lane.
We'll be celebrating her 85th birthday, looking back over her extraordinary career and playing some songs together at the Radio 2 piano.
Tuesday night from 7 on BBC Radio 2.
Neil Young and the wonderful Cinnamon Girl. 4:45, this is Radio 2. Paul O'Grady coming up after the news at 5. Whenever I chat to people about, you know, what are you doing these days? Oh, Sunday afternoon show? Oh, yeah, I always do my ironing to that. So here's an ironing song going out, requested by Christopher Rogers, listening in Portsmouth. Went to see Steve Miller at the Roundhouse last night. He was great, as usual. Here he is.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice. Cause I speak of the pompousness of love. People talk about me, baby. Say I'm doing you wrong, doing you wrong. Well, don't you worry, baby, don't worry. Cause I'm right here, right here, right here, right here at home. Cause I'm a picker, I'm a grinner, I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. I play my music in the sun. I'm a joker, I'm a smoker, I'm a midnight toker. I get my loving on.
Steve Miller Band and the Joker, also for Colin Dennis, who went to see the show last night, and he said it was just brilliant. Now, Terry Capewell says, just tuned in at 2 minutes after three in time to hear your ELP feature. I've got all the albums up to work, saw them at Wembley back in 74, maybe 75, promoting their Brain Salad Surgery album. Carl Palmer's stainless steel drum kit, kettle drums, Chinese gongs, and a church bell overhead. It was a phenomenal sight to a 17-year-old. It was all about excess with those bands. This one from Phil Whiting in Falmouth. Nice story about Greg Lake and the ending of Lucky Man. Didn't know that until now. They did a sort of joke song about Eddie Offord, the engineer, called Are You Ready, Eddie? We'll have to take a look for that. And a brilliant Sunday morning here in Edmonton, Canada. ELP, one of my favourite groups. I remember seeing pictures at an exhibition at the cinema in Lowestoft. Truly inspiring, if not a little crazy. That's from Stuart Sargent in Edmonton. Well, we end with some music from ELP and some memories from Greg Lake. We'll start with C'est la vie.
In the night, do you light a lover's fire? Do the ashes of desire for you
remain. Like the sea, there's a love too deep to show. Took a storm before my love flowed for you, c'est la vie. Oh, c'est la vie. Oh, c'est la vie.
And then coming back to ELP and Works Volume 1, 1977, another one you wrote with Pete Sinfield, c'est la vie.
Yeah, well, c'est la vie was a song, it was really a song I wrote, and I think Pete came in at the end and wrote a verse, but I'd written it because I lived in Paris for a while. And I was walking down the street one day and I heard, I don't know what they call those French barrel organ things they do, but it makes a special sound that's really Parisian. And I had this sound going round in my head. It was a bit like going to a Las Vegas casino, you know, where you hear the jingling of the fruit machines. And even after you've left the casino, it still goes on in your head. And the sound of this whirligig thing kept going in my head. And I walked past this cafe and I heard the voice of Edith Piaf, the lady who sang No Regrets. And I thought, that's it, you know, I should try and write a song with a sort of French flavour. And so I got home and I started to, sat down with my guitar, I started to write C'est la vie, and that was it. And the remarkable thing about that song was that it was eventually covered by a French singer called Johnny Hallyday, Johnny Hallyday. And Johnny had a number one hit in France with it, which gave me a lot of pleasure as an Englishman. You'll understand.
Like a song out of tune and out of time, all I needed was a rhyme for you, c'est la vie. Can play for you, c'est la vie.
You did your autobiography called Lucky Man.
Yes.
And out of that sort of came this idea of a show where you share all your experiences with people.
Yeah, yeah. It's because, you know, in writing the autobiography, every now and again a song would pop up that was kind of pivotal, in a way, important to me. And I just realised at the end of it all that what I was looking at, really, was this journey that the audience and I had shared over my lifetime and their lifetime. And of course, with each of these songs, there comes a little story. So I thought, wouldn't it be nice to have like an intimate show where we went through these songs and I told them my little story that was attached to it, and where they could tell their stories if they wanted. And so we could share this thing. And there's the word again, share. This was the shared music era. And the idea came to me of the concept Songs of a Lifetime. And it is just that. It's a journey we went on together. It's like a tapestry. And the remarkable thing is there's a bond that exists between the people who made, like yourself, who actually made this era what it was, you know, who brought it to be. We all shared in it. We were all there. On this last tour I did, Songs of a Lifetime in America, guy stood up in the audience and he said, Greg, I used to be a DJ. In the night time, I did the night shift. And he said, one night I had a phone call from a man called up. He said, I wonder if you could do me a favour. He said, my daughter is ill, in fact she's dying. And she asked if you would play Watching Over You by Greg Lake. And he said, of course I would play it. So the man said, thank you very much, I'm really grateful, and put down the phone. And the DJ, the man said to me, he said, I never told the audience what the call was, but I just played the track. And he said, and I went on with the show, you know. And he said, about an hour later, the phone rang again, and it was the man on the phone. He said, I've just rung to thank you very much. She died when you played the song. And, you know, there was this moment when the audience just sucks breath, you know. And, of course, it's tears running down people's eyes. And me too, you know, it's a very touching moment. And that's when you feel the gravitas and the beauty, really, in and the payback of writing a song like that.
Sleep tight, you know everything is all right, and tonight I will be here watching over you. For tonight I will be here watching over you. Tonight I'll be here watching over you. It is never as real as it seems, and in the morning when you wake up, I will be right here. Sleep on, sleep on, for no matter how dark or how long, it may seem that your night is, I will still be here. I will still be watching, watching over you. So sleep, little darling, sleep on through. Be still, for you know that I always will, tonight and forever, be watching over you. For tonight and forever, be watching over you. Sleep, little darling, sleep on through. I will be watching over you.
Watching Over You by Emerson, Lake and Palmer from The Works, Volume 2. Keith Emerson's new album, Three Fates, is out on October the 29th, and Greg Lake is on tour with Songs of a Lifetime through November. Dates on greglake.com. That's our show for today. Thanks to Rebecca Maxted, Mark Higgins and Rupert Flint for their help, and the show is a Wise Buddha production for Radio 2. I'm back on Tuesday evening with another edition of Johnny Walker's Long Players. and then next Sunday at 3. Take very good care. This is BBC Radio 2, online on digital radio and on 88 to 91 FM. BBC News.